I just want you to know that I'm sorry.
What's up, everyone?
Who is ready? We are finally here for season two. This is our first episode. I'm so excited. Mm-hmm. We're doing it this time.
Yes, we are.
So on today's episode, we're going to talk about how your inner child still shows up today.
So in last season, we ended up going over and writing letters to our inner child, talking to ourselves to let us know what we needed to hear as little kids. Mm-hmm. So the one thing we didn't go over was what actually is an inner child and what that looks like.
Yeah.
So I'm going to kind of explain it so that everybody can understand what an inner child is. It's basically the little version of you. It's the one that formed before you had the tools to make sense of the pain or the fear, the rejection, and the abandonment. But unfortunately, this version still lives inside of you. It still shows up now in your relationships, your fears, your rejections, and even in your longing to be seen. So today, we're going to be holding a space for that child to hear them, to heal them, and to learn how to love them in the ways you always deserve. That being said, I am Jess.
I'm Val.
And I'm Liz.
So with all that being said, we're going to break down how our inner child shows up in three different parts. So we have habits, we have fears, and we have triggers. So I'd like to kind of just touch on each one of those.
Absolutely. And I think the best idea, if we want to do it this way, why don't we all start with habits? We'll go each person, pick your top three, and then we'll list and go from there.
Okay.
Okay.
Sounds good.
All right. So let's go ahead and just start it off. I will start it off. And I think my first one, or my top one, would be like emotional disconnection. I cannot show vulnerability to hardly anybody. And that includes like those the closest to me, because it's just, it's not something you do. It's not how I grew up. You don't, you know, you have to hide your crying. You have to, you know, hide your emotions. You have to suppress them down a little bit. And,
like minimize yourself.
Yeah. You minimize yourself. Cause I push people away that get too close, or I, feel numb. Like I check out during certain conversations or certain talks that people have with me. I have to disassociate from that, because mm-hmm. I don't want to feel that in that moment. I have the preference to be alone. I could be surrounded by 1,000 people and be like, okay, let's just go home and get in bed.
So, you like to seclude.
I do. I am a secluder, 100%. But that also like leads into my hyper independence,
mm-hmm.
because I would rather just do it myself than to ask anybody for help, or, you know, oh, hey, can you just go grab this from the store? Never mind. I'll just go do it. It's fine, because right. at least I know it's going to be right, because the OCD kicks in too, because mm-hmm. you want to make sure that everything's perfect during that whole scenario inside your head, because mm-hmm. you have a constant battle inside your head when it comes to your hyper independence with anything. But I also think that that rolls into being too much, or like dimming yourself down, which is why I tend to seclude myself. Because I feel like if I go out and I'm around people, even people that know me and love me, I feel like I have to dim down who I am just to fit into whatever group I'm hanging out with at the moment. And that becomes exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
So I seclude myself and I hide my room, or I hide at my house, you know, yeah. I do things like that.
And I think you've talked about that in the past, for feeling like you have to minimize yourself to fit into a box mm-hmm. when you're around certain people.
Yep. I have.
Those are three really strong habits.
Yes, they are.
And I know that those are rough. And I can actually relate to you on a lot of them, and not to sound repetitive, but I do have a lot of the same habits that you do. My first one is definitely overfunctioning, which falls into with people pleasing. So my biggest problem with my overfunctioning is I will take on way too much responsibility. And that falls into the people pleasing portion of it, because I struggle with using the word no. And I know we've talked about that yes. in the past. But that truly like is something from childhood that I've struggled with, is using the word no. And I would rather drown myself to help someone else than to just say no and put that boundary for myself, mm-hmm. which is something I'm trying to work through currently right this second. But I'm realizing it's a mixture of like trying to fix someone, and also realizing like, if I have to really deep root that cause, it's because I was taught that love is earned by what you do, not just freely given. My second one, again, repeating you a little bit here, is hyper independence. So this one's rough for me, because I feel like in the past, there was so much inconsistency with my dad, right? That I learned that when I ask for help, okay, if I put my heart on the line, if I ask for physical or emotional or mental help in any shape or form, I feel like I'm being a burden, right? Mm-hmm. In that. And I feel like it's always unsafe. When I was growing up, I had this feeling like that was unsafe to do. And also was a big disappointment for me. So I noticed that now in my adult life, I struggle with asking for help at all. I will choose to do everything on my own.
You will deplete yourself.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, even like down to like cleaning the house, like I'll be like, oh, can I, you know, I'm not going to do it. I'm just going to do it myself because it's not going to get done right. And it's wrong because I'm literally like alienating someone else from doing the same thing to help me.
Yep.
And that was a struggle. Which
breeds for resentment.
Absolutely. Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah. And it's my own resentment towards someone else, but I'm the one causing that. Mm-hmm. And that's the messed up part about the whole situation is I'm the one doing that.
Yeah.
Right. And then my third one again is emotional suppression. But mine's a little bit different. I feel like my emotional suppression comes from minimizing my needs because when I was younger, I felt like there were people that should have been there for me that wasn't there for mm-hmm. me. And so instead, I didn't want to ever feel like I was being too much for anybody in the aspect of not that I don't think anybody ever really came out and was like, oh, you're being too much. Because I learned from so young on, like the less I say, the quieter I am. I always remember my grandmother always making the comment of going, you know, children are supposed to not speak unless they're spoken to. And so that was me minimizing. And I learned that at such a young age that even though with certain people that I was comfortable with, I could talk, but in 90% of situations, I find that I still to this day will minimize myself and not say anything about my feelings, about anything, not even just part of it's for conflict, but I think a lot of it is more of, I just don't want to be that burden. Again, it comes down to being a burden, I think, really.
Which it's so funny because now as adults, we take that and go, we're supposed to be spoken to, and then we speak. And now we give our children and the people around us opportunity to take up space.
Hell yeah. Break that generational
curse. Which is amazing.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
100%.
So speaking of talking and being spoken to, I have a few that I would like to touch on. So my habits, I tend to over-explain things. And welcome to the podcast where I don't know how many times I've sat here and spoken circles because I like to over-explain myself. Because I feel like explaining different ways of how I am just to avoid being misread. I feel like as a child, I was always misunderstood. And there were so many times where I didn't feel like I was being heard in the way that my heart was trying to speak. So I try to make sure that I over-explain everything to everyone so they really understand my intentions. And it still shows up in my adult life and especially my work life. I over-explain so much. To the point that it's deafening to me.
Yeah.
And it hurts. So another one that I have also to touch on, because we're very much alike, is I overfunction in all types of relationships. Work life, family life, relationships, all that stuff. Because I anticipate the needs of others. So I make sure that I know what I'm dealing with. I take on emotional labor. Because being needed feels safer than being wanted. If I'm needed, you won't leave. Mm-hmm. If I'm not needed, you're gonna leave me. So I definitely overfunction in all types of relationships. And I also monitor moods. Kind of ties into that. My habit of monitoring moods is sickening. I'm very hyper aware of shifts in people's tone, their energy, their vibe. And it's very much so rooted in emotional unpredictability growing up because I didn't know what I was walking into and what I was getting.
Yeah.
So
that shows that you were involved in narcissistic like relationships from young on.
Yeah.
Because I know that feeling mm-hmm. of when you walk in the door going, who am I going to see today?
Yeah. Yep.
And that's a struggle that will put you in fight or flight right off the bat.
I live in that state. So I definitely monitor. And it's tiring. I monitor to the point that I'm like, all right, my ability to read people are like, oh, you're really good at reading, you know, a room. That's trauma.
Yeah, I agree. Because I do the exact same thing.
Yeah.
The exact same thing.
Yep. So this brings us into where I kind of want to touch on the fears that are rooted in these habits. So a fear of mine, obviously, if you can't tell, a fear of mine would be abandonment. Canceled plans, silence, late texts, because silence to me is rejection. Rejection is distance, and distance is abandonment to me.
Right.
So I have a deep-rooted fear of being left, no matter the situation, and it's terrible. Another fear of mine is not being enough, so I shrink myself and I overcompensate who I am instead of just authentically being me. Mm-hmm. And understanding that that little child does not have to rule anymore, does not have to control me, because I am enough at baseline.
Right.
But that fear definitely rules a lot of situations. And the last one for me is fear of being misunderstood. I kind of touched on that earlier about over explaining myself, because I have been so misunderstood, but that's a deep-rooted fear that I feel that I can't be loved unless I have to explain every intention that I'm being. And that's no way to live.
That's definitely not.
No.
And it's shitty. I'm going to be 100% honest with you. It's such a terrible feeling, and I can relate in so many ways. And I hate to sound like we're just being repetitive, but a lot of my fears are the same as yours in that aspect. But again, this is the great part where you have three people who are all sharing maybe the same fears, but how it affects them directly. Mm-hmm. So for me, like, one of my biggest ones is fear of abandonment. But mm-hmm. with that being said, how I handle my fears is a little bit different than you, where you cling. I am the biggest world's, you know, well-known, put me in the Guinness Book World Records for this self-sabotager.
Yeah.
Like, I am so bad about self-sabotaging. And for me, it really truly feel like this fear comes from, like, in my mind, right? I go, oh, they're going to leave. I start creating those stories, right? And when those stories are created in my head, I'm like, oh, but it's time for me to walk the fuck out, right? Yep. And so I will start doing everything in my power to self-sabotage that situation just to get out of it, because I would rather leave before being left.
Yep.
And that's where yes, I'm different do. In that aspect. I will completely emotionally, like, just shut down. I will withdraw all feelings and I become a completely different person. I will be cold. I'll be callous. I'll be heartless. You won't even know who I am. And that is one of the hardest fears, I think, out of all of them. I think fear of abandonment really is something that when you struggle with it, it will affect your day-to-day relationships, your life, everything in so many different ways, even down to jobs.
It's your worst enemy.
It yeah. is. 100% is. I mean, if I'm working a job and I start to feel like they're unhappy with me in any sort of way, I'm like, fuck it,
watch
I'm out.
This.
Yeah. I am quick to dip. You yep. know what I mean? Then that's all because of that. Like, it's needing that emotional security. And so that fear is very, very heavy and resonates very deep with me. My next one, of course, just like yours, was not being enough. I think growing up, having so many times in my life where I felt like I was just alone, it made me feel like I connected with people not having time for me was me not being good enough. Mm. My dad not prioritizing me made me feel like I wasn't good enough for him. Mm-hmm. So what's wrong with me?
Mm-hmm.
So that became a big, huge problem. And it was like the inconsistent love created this fear of just, you're not enough. So minimize yourself, shrink yourself down to fit into what they may want. So when in that time, I would find that I was trying to do stuff to be more like what they wanted me to be.
Mm-hmm.
And when that still wasn't good enough, it just reinforced that fear for me to go, I'm just not good enough no matter what I do.
Right.
And I would say my last one is being a burden. And I know I just talked about it in my habits, but that really interconnects all of it, is when no one had that time for me again, I was a burden. So instead, it was easier for me to just do everything alone, be by myself, and not put the weight on someone else, because I didn't want to be a burden, because if I felt like I was too much, then I must be a burden to them, that they don't want to be there.
Retreating.
Yeah.
Recluse.
So it's no fun. But
it's funny, because like as you're sitting there talking about like how you resent people, and that's how you self-sabotage, because you're like, well, watch this.
Yeah, the black hat.
Not only do I do that in my relationships, I also do those in my friendships. I do it in my family. Like I just in all aspects of my life, because I'm like, I create like these, I feel like I'm crazy half the time, because I create these scenarios. Like somebody could just be quiet for a day and I'm like, oh, fuck, they hate me. What do they do?
Yeah.
Like, you know, like that is my biggest fear. Like I can go a day or two without talking to somebody and I'll go, okay, well, did I say something that pissed them off? Fuck, they're leaving. Okay, so this is what we're going to do. And I create this scenario, and then I start to resent them, whether it be family, friends, somebody that I'm dating, whoever it is. I've created this scenario in my head, and then I just get this, you guys have known me for years and have heard me say this multiple times, I get a bad taste in my mouth. Mm-hmm. And the minute I get that bad taste in my mouth, I'm fucking done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm done. And that is literally, not only is that so unhealthy, it roots from my childhood with my mother, because she would go on her benders for days on end, and I would be there, you know, 6-7 years old, trying to wake her up off the couch, and she probably needed Narcan. Like, let's be fucking for real. And I'm sitting there going, hey, mom, I'm hungry, and she's just passed out.
Right.
And I'm thinking, okay, well, who else is here to take care of me? And then that folds into my hyper independence, because my fear is like, well, nobody else is here. Who's going to take care of me? I guess I have to do it myself.
Right.
Like, we're all grown-ups here. We all know we have to take care of our own things. But also, it's nice to have somebody there to take the slack off sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And there's times in life where I just feel like it's just all on me, 24/7.
Right.
And then you add motherhood into that. Like,
that's a whole different ballgame.
That's a whole different ballgame. And I only have one. I don't understand how you do it with 3, 5.
Six. We're at 6 now.
Only 3 are, like, biologically hers.
Technically, I mean, if you want to get it all technicality, we have 8 all total.
Correct.
Including, like, adopted, step, biological, all of them. It's 8 all total.
Yeah, no. I can't handle one. I mean, I can handle it. I could not do 8. And then, like, When I do that, my biggest fear is being too much. Because if I'm resenting you and I'm creating these scenarios in my head, that I'm getting an attitude with you for no fucking reason, and I'm creating problems that aren't there, so then you're getting mad at me for having an attitude with you because you're like, what the fuck's going on? And then I'm going, well, shit, what did I say? I've done too much. I've said too much. Now let's go back into the rabbit hole of, let's go be in my room alone and seclude myself for the next few weeks. You know what I mean? Like, it's a repetitive cycle that is disgusting.
It's a roller coaster you struggle to get off of.
Yeah. Every single day. Every single day. So.
I mean, yeah. I it is definitely something that I think in all of these, I mean, realistically, if we look at all of them, I would say what all ties us all together, and it is a habit still, but ties the fears and our habits together, is overthinking. And I think that's something none of us mentioned.
We do that
hardcore. What you're
talking about.
Yeah, that I think that's a big problem.
Not you.
And you know what, I think overthinking also falls into our triggers.
Yeah.
So let's go and jump into that. So I'll go ahead and start this one off. So
she's like, bitch, I got this.
So my first one is actually feeling ignored or unimportant. And I know it sounds stupid, but like, whenever I feel like my feelings are dismissed, my thoughts are not being like, or someone not emotionally showing up for me, it immediately triggers me like so bad, because it makes me feel like I did when I was a kid, of feeling unseen.
Yep.
And so immediately I get an attitude and I'm like, what the fuck? You know what I mean? Like, why are you ignoring my feelings? Like, I have just as much right, because now I'm learning. And through that learning, I'm going, wait a minute, I don't like this. You're making me feel triggered in this moment.
Uh-huh.
My second one is being left out or chosen last. And it's stupid, because feeling rejected, even in the smallest situations, right? Like, I could be having a conversation with someone, right? Or with a group of people. And in the middle of the conversation, if I start speaking and they completely like ignore me in that situation, and like, like it's bad. Like, oh, yeah. I feel like I'm being left out of the conversation. I'm like, did anybody not just hear what I said? Yeah. Like,
hello.
Right. And they just start talking over me and like pretend like I wasn't there. Like, it makes me feel like I'm invisible.
Yeah.
Right. And through that, that small little bit, it opens up those wounds of feeling like I wasn't chosen in my past. So why would someone want to choose me now? And it's shitty, but it's true. Right. And my last one, and probably my worst one, which I did not realize was actually a child wound until recently when I started doing my healing journey, and that was lack of stability. And I'm not just talking like financial stability. I'm talking like emotional, relational stability of any shape or form. Okay. Yep. Any type of chaos that starts forming and it feels unstable for me, I realize I almost become manic, mm-hmm. because that trigger sends me like straight through the roof with my anxiety, right? And what do? My manic episode leads to me literally like rearranging the whole house. I mean, the house could be clean and I'm like vacuuming the ceilings. You know what I mean? I'm like, I gotta get every cobweb. You know, because that's the one thing I can control.
Yep.
And so I try to find, because I am a control freak when it comes to myself, I have to find something to hold control of in that moment to feel like something stable in my life.
Yep.
It's terrible, but it's true.
Isn't it cool watching these? Because people go through life and go, why are they being this way? And it's so cool that we have such introspection and go,
that's why. Bro, it's trauma.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's my wounds speaking.
And unfortunately, that's why we're so understanding.
Right. Yeah. 100%.
All right. So mine, kind of the same type of aspect. Mine would be emotional unavailability. And this one kind of still rules my world to this day. I attract this pattern like something fierce.
You do. Mm-hmm.
And it's so sad. It definitely activates patterns of feeling that I need to earn someone's love. So when someone is kind of pulling away or going silent, I interpret that and I go, hey, I'm here. I still need to feel seen. Like, that child still rules. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm so actively trying to fix. So the second one kind of ties into that feeling, because I feel if I'm asking for these things that I want to be seen, I'm also, like you, feeling like a burden. So when I ask for normal things that people can ask for, mm-hmm. in a normal adult relationship or friendship or work relationship, reassurance, if I'm expressing discomfort in a situation and anyone responds with any type of annoyance immediately, I'm too much.
Right.
And that's just, that's a terrible feeling to have. And last one, being ignored is definitely a trigger for me. Because it ties into, if I'm being ignored, I'm not good enough, and that I'm worth leaving, that I'm not worth anyone staying for. And that just activates from childhood. Yeah. So, and being that way, it's like, there's a difference between space and silence.
There definitely is.
So when I feel that you're just downright ignoring me, I'm not feeling seen when I do everything in my power to make the other person never feel that way. So being ignored is absolutely 100% will always stay a trigger to me. I just need to learn how to control that. And I think that I'm getting better at controlling that. But recognizing being ignored as being a trigger and why it's happening was the most important step for me.
I agree.
Mm-hmm.
I think three of the major things that trigger me, and let me just start off by saying, like, I share a lot of the triggers that you guys have, but I think that there's other aspects to it because everybody's different. Mm-hmm. Everybody has Amen a different trigger. So healing is not linear.
No, it is not. So, Amen.
That was a hard word to say. So, like, for me, I am highly sensitive to conflict. And, like, I know I come off as, like, this, you know, ready to fight all the time. But I'm also, like, I don't want to do it.
It's a defense mechanism for you.
So, like, if anybody's, like, coming after me and just saying, not even coming after me, that's a hard way to say it. If they're coming to me and saying, hey, I really didn't like the way you did this, or I didn't like the way you said this, or even at work, somebody will come up to me and be like, oh, hey, you didn't do this, 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 and this. And I'm like, oh, who the fuck are you? Can you do my job? Because last time I checked, you couldn't. And I go, wait a second. I need to dial it back. Right. That's a trigger for me because I'm going fight or flight. Like, let's go. We're going to fight. Because when I was growing up, that was a huge thing. You either fought back or you got your ass beat. You know what I mean? And that's where I'm at.
Right.
So that's a huge fear for me.
And last week, I just want to touch on that, because last week you were just talking about, and I was so proud of you, how not everything deserves a reaction.
Mm-hmm.
That ties in there too.
It does tie in there because, again, the older you grow, you're going, I'm tired. I don't want to do this anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, I've learned that not everything needs a reaction, and to pause and reflect before I respond now,
mm-hmm.
and go, okay, maybe I should say it this way.
Absolutely. Can I ask a question real quick? Do you feel in that moment when there's conflict or someone critiquing you in that attack, do you feel, how do I want to word that? Do you feel like in that moment, like, someone's basically saying, like, you're not good enough?
Absolutely.
Is that what it is? Like, it comes down like you're just constantly in the wrong, like you're feeling like you're always in the wrong?
100%. Because I don't fit into their idea of what a person should be.
Mm. So it falls into the fear of not being enough.
Correct. So to tie into that also, I get, it's hard to say it's a fear, but it is. Or not a fear, excuse me, a trigger. I apologize. When too much is going on all at once, I get overstimulated bad. Like, it could be 100 people in the room that I love and care about, and I could still be like, this is too much.
Mm-hmm.
And, or if somebody's like super over dramatic about something emotional that happened in their day, because we've all been there. I'm not in that same headspace that they are. I'm going, okay, it's too much. Like, I need to dial it back a little bit. And I will literally shut down. I disconnect from everybody, and that triggers me to just go, okay, let's go into our happy place. Let's go quiet.
So basically your trigger's chaos.
It is. Like, I hate chaos.
Mm-hmm.
I thrive on chaos, but
she works in the ER.
But I work in the ER. Here we are.
Walking oxymoron.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Because I love the chaos.
When it's not directly affecting you.
Correct. Right. Like, when the chaos is there and I'm able to help somebody clean their chaos, I'm like, oh yeah, let's do this all day.
It's control.
Right. OCD. It's all tying together. So, like, that is a huge trigger for me, because I'm like, all right, let's just go ahead and dim that down and just go into our space, and nobody can hurt us while we're in our space. Because what happens in our space is our
it's in our control.
It's in our control. And then my third one that's a trigger for me is if I'm talking to you about something extremely important to me, and like I'm super excited about it, or I'm overly emotional about it, because here we are with the emotions, and you just go, oh yeah, well, you know, the other day I went and did, and you just completely dismiss what I'm just saying to you.
Oof.
That makes me go, why the fuck did I even bother telling you anything?
Yep. Yeah, you feel invisible.
Absolutely. I feel like my feelings aren't valid. I'm invisible. You don't give any kind of care about me in the world, and you don't care what I have to say. So I'm just going, all right, well, fuck me too then.
Yep.
Basically. You know what I mean? Because that's how it feels, being cut off. And that's why I think I don't cut other people off, because that's my fear.
Right.
Mm. Notice I'm the one that's like, I'm the quiet one. Like, she's not even moderator. Just on the podcast. I'm the moderator. Like, I sit back and I listen to everybody, because I don't want them to feel the fear that I do.
And you know what's messed up is I relate to that fear, right? Because I said about that, the same thing of like, if someone cuts me off, all that kind of stuff. But in the same aspect, I am so at fault of that. And I don't know why, because if it's a fear for me, why am I doing the same exact thing?
Right. Like, why would you want to make somebody else feel that same thing?
Right. And even though when in the moment, like, you know, and I think that's just like the ADHD brain kicking in that moment, because I don't mean to. It's kind of like diarrhea of the mouth. Like, in that moment when I don't know what to say, I'm like, oh, wait, I got a thought. Yeah. Hold on. And then it clicks, and I just need to get it out as quick as possible, or I'll lose it. Right. And I don't even realize that I'm doing it until I'm already like 3/4 away into my explanation. So I'm sorry. And I do apologize. No, and I just want to say that, because I'm taking accountability for myself in that, because I know I do that shit like all the time, and I don't mean to. And I try to catch myself, but I don't always catch myself. So I do apologize for the times that I do that to you.
Listen, it's a trigger for me though.
Right. But it's a trigger for me too.
But that's what I'm saying. I've done it.
Right.
I do it. Like, you can ask Alex, like, I cut her off like new sliced bread every day. And she goes, you're doing it again.
Yeah.
She has learned to just stop and just look at me and go, are you done?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll go, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Finish what you were saying.
What were you saying now? And she goes, I don't even remember, because her ADHD is just as bad as mine and yours and Valerie's. Like, it's bad.
Yeah.
So, and that's the problem with having ADHD is, like, if you don't cut somebody off right then and there, you're going to forget what you're going to have to say. And then that person in that moment forgets what they were saying. And then it's just, okay, so where do we go from here?
So I just think we start carrying around notebooks.
Yeah, I know. That would be great. That's honest. And I do the same thing. So I'm sitting here listening to you guys, and I want to jump in so bad going, yeah, me too. Because I absolutely do the same thing. And I'm just like, me and Jess are terrible at it on this podcast, if you haven't noticed. But I feel, so where you shut down, Liz, right? And this is the difference. This is where mine comes in. So where you shut down, if you're explaining something and someone interrupts you and you stop talking, I get louder because that's me going, I still need to be seen. I'm talking. I'm important. Do not shut me down.
Yeah.
Because I give everyone else that space to do so. Don't do that to me.
I wish.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's the great part about three different views of it. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Being able to see what everybody experiences, how everybody else handles their own fears, their abandonment issues, their triggers, their habits, all that. It shows, even though we have a lot of the same, the way we handle them are polar opposites totally in a lot different. Of ways.
Yep.
And that's crazy. Like really, truly looking at when you're actually doing the work and actually looking at all that, it's crazy to see it. So I think that kind of breaks us into the next segment part of this episode, and that is going over really connecting the patterns to childhood.
A disclaimer on this next section, we're going to be asking each other questions, and I think that it's going to be important if you guys as our listener wants to pause and also take these questions into your own and answer them as well, because it's going to help you understand more of why you do the things that you do. So as we're asking each other these questions, I would like you also to engage and think about where these are also rooted.
Yeah. I think that's a great idea. Mm-hmm. It really is, because it will help you also as well as we're trying to help ourselves. But we didn't create this podcast just for ourselves.
Nope.
We created it because we wanted to help others. So with this being said, it is a great idea to take a moment and just reflect on your own questions that are being asked to give the right answer.
Correct.
Anyways, okay. So Liz, can I ask you the first question?
Absolutely.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Lean on me. Okay. So what makes you shut down emotionally? And what would your younger self be feeling in that moment?
Oof. That's a hard question. Because I feel like there's so many different answers that can be given to that. And that's just for me because I have multiple personalities.
No.
It's Patricia.
It's Brittany, bitch.
So, like, for me, I mean, honestly, the feelings of being disregarded, that makes me shut down emotionally because it's a fear and a trigger at the same time. Because growing up, my mom wasn't there, and when she was there, she wasn't a mom, she was just a body to fill the void. And she would tell me, you know, shut up, go to your room, be quiet, nobody wants to hear you, nobody wants to see you, you don't need to eat that, you're too fat. But you also need to eat this so they don't call DCF on me. Like, there were so many things. So being in my room and being secluded allowed me to be my emotionally true self because I was alone. When I was around her, if I asked her for anything, it could just be, Mom, can I have some toast? And it was, shut up and go to your room. You don't need that.
That's so sad.
Or yeah. She was passed out on the couch, either on a drunk bender or a drug bender. You know, there was never an in between. And the moments that I did wake her up, you know, she would push me away, both physically and mentally. So I had to have my feelings just completely, they were gone. I wasn't allowed to have feelings. So in my daily life now, when somebody's like, well, you shouldn't feel that way, it makes me go, huh, okay, Lynn, you know, here we are. Mm. And for those who don't know, my biological mother's name was Lynn. There are much better ones out there.
Like my mama. Mm-hmm.
But that's like in my head, that's what I say. Like, I'm like, all right, Lynn, here we go. Right. And it literally makes me get like that little crick in my neck, as you would say, Jess. And it makes me go, let's fight, motherfucker, because here we are.
Right.
And I don't like doing that anymore because the roller coaster of emotions that you go through on a daily basis, based on what your childhood has brought out of you, is exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't want to be angry anymore. I've said that multiple times on this podcast. I don't want to be angry anymore. I'm tired of being emotional about everything. I'm tired of just dimming down my light. And I'm tired of rooting that back to her.
Yeah.
So that is a huge, huge thing that makes me shut down emotionally. My inner child, if they could see me today versus what they saw in the mirror, I feel like they would be so proud of me because I speak up more. I don't let people talk to me any kind of way. I treat people with respect, even though they've come after me. You know what I mean? Like, I've learned to overcome. But there's still that little girl in there who just wants to be seen and heard and loved.
I'm over here tearing up because that's powerful. I know, powerful. I can
see, I'm looking at her and she looks like she's crying and I'm like, don't do it.
Yeah,
don't
no, that's start. Powerful.
It so. Is extremely powerful.
I'm proud of you.
Don't cry.
Stop.
Don't bitches, cry. You better be journaling because if you're not crying, I don't know what you're doing.
And she means that in the most loving way.
I do. I absolutely do. All right. Can I ask Jessica a question? Do you mind if I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Okay. If you can go back and give your younger self one tool or truth to carry forward, what would it be?
Yeesh. Okay.
Yeesh.
I guess if I had to pick, I'd probably end up... I would have to say it was that you don't have to earn love by being perfect or being quiet or by self-sacrificing, that you're just worthy as you are. There's no difference. You are good enough.
Mm-hmm.
I'd probably place that truth in her hands with a lantern and push her forward and just remind her that love isn't something you have to beg for. Mm-hmm. It's not something that has to be, you don't have to prove your way into it, that you're allowed to have needs. You're allowed to ask questions. You're allowed to take up space without guilt. That being sensitive and empathetic is actually not a flaw, but a superpower.
It's such a gift.
It truly is. And softness is sacred. There's nothing wrong with being soft. And yeah. And lastly, I would probably tell her that there will be people who will leave, but that absence is not a reflection of your own self-worth.
Amen, babe.
Because that was something that I think I've struggled with a lot. And to keep choosing yourself, to keep showing up for yourself, because one day you'll realize you were the love you needed all along.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd probably be mine.
That's amazing.
Thank you.
And I think that being your own little cheerleader, it just creates a such a sacred space for people to allow to enter your life who needs to be there, because you created that love for yourself first, so you don't take breadcrumbs.
Yeah. Because I was good for a long time at taking breadcrumbs.
I know.
And I think that's realizing your own self-worth and having to hold on to that for a moment and go, you are worth more than bare minimum.
Absolutely.
So.
All right, Val. It's your turn.
Sup?
I'm going to ask you a question. Are you ready?
Ready.
Freddy.
Or not. Here it comes.
It's coming.
It's coming.
What did you learn about love as a child, and how has that shaped your beliefs in your romantic life?
I love the laughter that comes with this question.
That's multifaceted and hugely layered for me. It all starts that I feel that love leaves. That is a core belief of mine. I feel that love is not meant to stay. It is given and then it is taken away. So I had a mom who showed me love, but she was very emotionally distant. She was physically present. She was physically able to provide for me, but the emotional availability, I was starving. So she also undermined my own needs, and she didn't stay consistently present, and she chose other men over choosing her own daughter a lot of the times. So that creates to minimize how I view myself, because makes me feel like I have to shrink to be loved. Like I have to fit into her box. Whenever she's ready to give me love, I'm available. So that created a space for me to shrink myself down to make sure that I'm available when someone's ready to give me their love. And that's no way to fucking live.
That's
at all. So with my mom being my mom, I think that she tried to love me in the capacity that she knew how. But she was also so broken herself that she was trying to reach validation for other men to validate herself. So she would consume herself and other people and not give me the love that I needed as a kid to give me that strong foundation.
Right.
So there was a time when she, when my dad had passed away, and then she got into a new marriage and I was living with her, and I noticed that she started taking everything out of the house. Like, I mean, removing pictures, her clothes, all of the furniture, and she was moving in with her other boyfriend. And then I remember one morning when she came home and she was taking the rest of her stuff, I came out of the bedroom and the house was empty. Like, when I tell you the sickest feeling in my stomach, I still carry that with me. And I remember her looking at me going, you need to find somewhere to go because I'm moving in with Joe and he doesn't want kids there. Cool. Got it.
That's fucked up.
That's fucked up. Right? And I have carried that self, and that's created me to be so incredibly financially independent, because never again, if I can't rely on my mother, I ain't relying on no one.
Right.
And that's how it shows up now. So I'm sick and tired, and that's not the first time that she's done that. I talked about the last podcast,
right,
about the letter when I was in nursing school. I'm ready to move on and you need to move out. Like, that's just, love comes and it goes.
Right, because every time you relied on her, she disappointed you.
Absolutely. So that is, that's created chaos in my life. Chaos feels like home.
Right.
And if I'm not constantly chasing, and if not, I'm not shrinking myself to be loved, I don't know what that looks like. I don't know what that looks like.
Yeah.
So, and that's not anything that I want to be anymore.
I know.
So there's the long and short of that.
It's crazy because, though, you know, of course we've said it before, the whole reason we created this podcast was to help, but it's like, we turned our pain into a playlist and then called it a podcast.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what it is.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. So now, Liz, I'm going to ask you a question.
Okay.
So given everything that you've said to us, how do you now protect your inner child?
I feel like this is probably the easiest question of the day,
mm-hmm.
not in life.
Yeah.
I have learned to pick my battles. It's been a long, hard road. But I've learned that, and I've said it before, not everything needs a reaction. Because I know that if that has a reaction, like if I give them a reaction, they're going to have one back to me. And that's going to trigger something
mm-hmm.
from my past. And I don't need triggers anymore. So I've learned, like, if there's a conflict, I'm sorry you feel that way.
Good for you.
Now, there is still a part of me, though. That the hood rat comes out, okay?
No.
Not 100%. Boosie badass. But, like, I've learned, like, I don't need to hear everything from everybody. They don't need to hear everything from me. I've learned just sometimes silence speaks volumes.
Mm-hmm.
It does. It's more powerful. It's easier to not be involved than to sit there and feel bad about what someone else's actions are causing you to feel.
Mm-hmm.
You are not what they're saying to you. You know what I mean? Like, you're not what they're making you out to be. And maybe you are, but in that moment, you don't need to hear that because you're trying to do the adult thing. You're trying to get over it and you're trying not to create a bigger problem than what's actually there.
Right.
Which I have a huge, huge problem with doing. And all of that reverts back to childhood. You know, you'd come home from a bad day at school. My mom would be on the couch drunk off Goldschlager. I can't even smell it anymore. And she would ask me, how's your day? And I'd go to tell her. And you guys remember that movie Matilda?
Yes.
Where Matilda walks in and she's at the mom asks her, oh, how was your day? And she's on the phone, and so Matilda starts talking to her and she's like, can't you see I'm on the phone?
Yep.
Well, you just asked me about my day.
Yeah.
That's kind of like, that's how my childhood went. Oof. And then I would go to my room.
Yo, that just brought something up for me.
I'd go to my room. I would sit in there and, you know, talk to my Barbies because they didn't talk back to me.
to my Barbies. Two things. I'm really big on, you can't control how people are talking to you, but you can control how you respond.
Correct.
And then number two, that literally just brought up the same thing. How many times do I sit here and say, in relationships or friendships or whatever it may be, I'm so sick and tired of being talked at.
Yes.
Not talked to.
Correct.
Yep.
If you don't want to know, don't ask.
Correct. Or if you're not going to follow up, if I give you a response and you don't respond to what the fuck I just said, don't ask me in the first place.
Yeah. 100%.
Girl. Girl.
Take like, what? Don't right. ask me for my opinion on something if you don't want to hear what it is.
That's right.
Yeah.
Hold space, bitches.
Oh, I hold space.
For yourself.
For myself.
Yeah. You hold space for yourself.
Yeah. Well, guess whose turn it is?
Oh, boy.
Because I feel like we can segue into my next question, and it's going to be directed at you, Jess.
Oh, okay.
Is there a recurring trigger in your relationships that traces back to your childhood?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, 100%.
Oh, yeah. That's a quick one.
Yeah, I'll go with this as an easy question for me. And I'm gonna break it down into two parts. So in my past, yes, and it's all about self-sabotage, right? Like my trigger is one is to trigger me to be self-sabotaging, right? Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. So in the past, in toxic relationships or in bad situations with just toxic people, toxic family, toxic friends, whatever the situation was, I had to self-sabotage because I was protecting myself from getting hurt because I felt the hurt coming, right? I knew it was coming. Like I was self-aware enough to know this is not going to end well, right? But if I'm jumping forward into my relationship with Eric, right? That is a whole different layer that I didn't even know about until Eric, okay? And so when I say that, because I'm not, as you said before, about like the whole chaos, right? We have all learned to thrive in chaos and toxicity in our life, whether it been from our past of like our childhood, whether it been from relationships, or no matter the avenue of where it came from, I think it all still kind of boils together that we are just good in chaos, right? But what happens when things are calm?
Oof. It drives me absolutely
fucking
insane.
Right. Okay. And that's my problem, right? So for me, I would say one of my biggest triggers is when me and Eric first got together, and it still is the exact same way as it was in the beginning, right? The relationship felt too good. It felt too calm,
when
too safe.
When's the other shoe gonna fall?
Right. Too much of a lot of good things that I was not used to.
This can't be true.
Yeah. I mean, and the crazy part is that in that moment, instead of going where I normally would in the past, going, oh, I'm self-aware, this is about to happen, things are about to go bad, everything's about to turn into shit, I need to start protecting myself. No. In this situation, it's the reverse, right? So instead, I start creating shit that's not even there, right? And I have gotten much better, I will say. You know, the first year of our relationship, I know I've said to you guys a million times, I was always on guard. I was ready for something to happen. And to the point that I would try to go, it's time to start self-sabotaging, because I would start creating lies in my own mind. Like my mind itself is a thief, right? And it'd be stealing these thoughts and just throwing them ahead, going, you're not good enough, he's going to leave, love don't last, this isn't real, it's too good for you, you're just going to get hurt. And so in return, my brain went, it's time to start self-sabotaging.
Yep.
And that was probably one of my biggest problems, is because I was listening to something that wasn't true. And it was telling my nervous system, don't fully trust this. This isn't safety. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, and I had to rewire my brain in this situation. And this has always been a reoccurring thing. And this is where I'm trying to break that cycle, because I'm going, okay, don't self-sabotage. Don't self-sabotage. Yep. Don't self-sabotage. And I have to keep, and there's days where I'm like, I woke up and chose violence. It's time to act a fool. And I have to stop myself and go, he hasn't done anything wrong.
Right.
Right. But in that, I'm so used to, because my childhood from, and not never from my mom, but from my dad and from my grandmother, I had a lot of it being filled with abandonment, inconsistency, emotional neglect. So I learned early on not to trust the good.
Yeah.
Right. So when you're not trusting the good, when good comes, you're going, meh, this isn't going to end well. Right. And that's where I can't handle that. So in return, I try to leave before I can get left, because as you said the other day, like you were always told, like, you know, it's if no news is good news for me, I'm like, no news is bad news. Right.
Yes.
And that's what it comes down to in my head.
Boy, are you right sometimes.
Right. Okay.
90% of the time.
Not 90, but there are a good amount of times that I may be right. Okay.
Just 89.5.
Just a little sometimes.
Just a little sometimes. But it really, truly, I've realized it's my way of staying in control of the pain. If I can control the situation, I can stay ahead of where the pain come from. So this way I don't get affected by it, right? Because then I can shut myself down. I can protect myself. I can put up that armor around my heart to go, it's okay. You're the little girl in you. You're okay. Everything's going to be fine. I got you. Don't worry. I'm going to shield you from this. And so I would do that to myself. and would even and found, you know, with him that with Eric, I've been doing that and I had to stop because it's something I couldn't keep doing. So now I'm learning to catch myself. I'm learning to say in my head, is this real or is this your past speaking? And that was like so big of learning to break those two apart. And I'm having to take that moment and self-reflect and go, okay, is this really something you need to be worried about? Is what you're thinking in your head, is this a real thought or is this your past speaking to you to try to protect you from something that's not even there?
And you know what's crazy is that protecting that peace can create more grief than just allowing it to happen.
Right. And it's learning that not everybody's going to hurt you.
Right.
It's realizing that not everybody's the same person. Yes, people leave, but that doesn't mean that everybody leaves.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that's truly what it comes down to. And love doesn't have to feel like a fight. And that's hard. It's hard when you've been trained in your head to believe that love should feel like a fight and to go, no, it doesn't.
Yeah.
Not everything needs to be a fight. And even when old wounds are screaming otherwise,
right,
in that moment, it's okay to stay when things are safe.
Absolutely.
And so that would be my answer.
Proud of you.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
I've seen that work. I've literally seen over in the, right? Our calls that we used to get. I'm just waiting for the shoe to fall. Or yep. This doesn't seem right.
Right.
You know, I know he's out doing something when he was really at work.
Yeah.
Right.
He's just out busting his ass. And like, I'm over here like, I guarantee he's talking to another bitch.
Right. Like, and it's crazy because now looking at that in hindsight being 2020, it's like you deserve that love all along. And it's just, it's so genuine.
I know.
Good for you. I'm proud of you.
So it breaks me down to your question.
I don't want it.
No, it's too fucking bad. Getting asked anyways. Okay. So I'm going to ask you pretty much the exact same question. Okay. And that is there a pattern that you keep repeating that you can now track back? So not a trigger, but a pattern in your life.
Just like how you dove into that one. Ooh. I'm going to dive in. I choose unavailable people.
Ding, 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 ding.
Fries are done.
Ding, fries are done. Ding.
Okay, so yeah, I choose emotionally unavailable or inconsistent partners because inconsistency, again, feels like home to me.
Right.
Unavailability feels like home to me. That sucks. So it happens, people show up passionately in my life. They're all for it. They're all in. They are all here. And then one morning they wake up and say, hey, I'm not in love with you anymore.
Right.
There's my waiting for the shoe to drop.
Right.
Out of nowhere. And it seems like a pattern that I feel like I'm so constantly. And it's like, I'm not kidding. Since I have been married when I was like 20 years old. Okay. Every man that I have chosen has been in some form unavailable.
Right.
Emotionally, physically,
mentally, spiritually, all of it.
Literally all of it. Okay. And I feel it's exhausting because that's the pattern that I'm trying to chase. But now, where I was chasing that, I'm realizing that, like, before I didn't realize it was a pattern. I'm just going to start there. Okay. Before I just thought that, like, okay, well, they're just indecisive and they have a lot going on, da 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 da. No, it's not that at all. You're choosing that. And it's like it's like literally God is trying to show me, this is your pattern. Where are you going to change it? Right. So I get offered emotional breadcrumbs. I get all in, I get hot and cold. Right. Mm-hmm. But I'm not offered meals. I'm not offered the whole thing. I'm literally breadcrumbed into relationships.
Right. You get the hors d'oeuvres.
It's crazy. Like I will literally just sit there and take breadcrumbs from you. Or I used to. Let me pause. I used to until I recognized this pattern. Which the emotional breadcrumbs makes me feel like I have to earn their love instead of receiving it fully.
Right.
I have abandonment anxiety disguised as chemistry, which creates an intense attraction to hot and cold men.
Oh yeah, you do that. You do that hardcore.
Bad. It's terrible. And I'm like, oh, but we have such good chemistry. Bitch, sit the fuck down. Like, really? So when someone pulls away, it doesn't just hurt me. It literally feels like I'm trying to close the gap and understand why. So how many times do I sit here and spiral and go, but why is this happening? Why are they doing that? I will why the situation to fucking death. And then I'm like, they're physically present, but they're like emotionally distant. And I'm like, hey, mom, how's that going? Okay. Like literally it's I'm choosing partners. Like I chose my parents. I didn't choose my parents. I'm choosing partners like how I lived my life growing up.
Right.
Now, disclaimer, I had a father that was terribly abusive to my mom, and they separated when I was 7 years old. And then my mom got remarried to my stepdad, and he was wonderful.
Right.
He was so sweet, but they ended up, well, he got cancer and he passed away in my early 20s. So I was still like forming who I was. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and all the men that she's chosen since then, they can literally fucking kick rocks. Period.
End of story. I said what I said.
Yeah, I said what I said. You know, so emotionally distant makes me feel like abandonment feels familiar to me.
Right.
So because familiar feels like home, even when it hurts, I'm trying to rewrite my own story, hoping this time that I'm chosen. So I'm trying to look at these people and go, okay, I wasn't chosen in my childhood. So when they go quiet, I'm sitting here going, when they come back, oh my God, I'm chosen.
Right.
That's all I wanted all along, was to be chosen.
I know.
Because I know that, like, I know what I have to offer. And I'm sick and tired of trying to over-explain myself of what I have to offer.
You shouldn't have to either.
No, yeah. No. You know, like, I have a good job. I have a good, stable home. I make my own money. I'm smart. I'm funny. I'm beautiful. I'm good with kids. Like, I have all of these qualities, and I'm sick and tired of being like, well, what's wrong with me? I just want to be chosen.
Right. You and you what? Should be chosen.
Yeah. But guess what? Ride out, stay single.
Until you find the right one.
No, really. Like, the emotional unavailability to me is just wild. Yeah. I'm tired of it. And what I find crazy is people who come off as available and then they're not available. That's also fucking wild to me. Let's speak on that.
Yeah. But do you also think that maybe you kind of like magnetize towards emotionally unavailable people?
I don't know how, because I'm not intentionally doing that.
But I wasn't. Okay. I could go off of exactly what you're saying. And I used to do the exact same thing. Right. Up until Eric, I literally attracted people that were just like my father. 100% emotionally unavailable. Even though they wanted to be in a relationship, they never fully would let me in. Right. Narcissistic traits. Some form of abuse, whether it been drugs or alcohol or whatever the situation is, it was always poor me. It's I'm the victim. I'm everything. I attracted the same style people over and over and over again until I went, I have to change what I'm doing. And I think sometimes maybe you need to stop being so emotionally available for unemotionally available men.
Yeah, that's why I stopped.
Yeah, I know. No, I know. I get that.
Which is crazy. So this kind of ties into that whole thing of like emotional unavailability. But I have now since realized how much I am worth. So I'm able to actually speak my mind now. Hey, this bothers me.
Right.
And if you want to back away because it bothers me, please do so.
And I think because you realize that, I think that your future will look a little bit different now.
Yeah.
Because you will stop attracting that. And I don't know what it is that we put off. Or that we attract ourselves to, but sometimes the familiar is comfortable. And yeah. So when we find something in someone that we may not right away see as, you know, emotionally unavailable, you're seeing it as, oh, this feels familiar. I like you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And let me see if I can fix you.
Yes.
You know, and you can't. We've talked about this before. You can't fix them. Right. And I think that's what we go off of, is we search for that,
mm-hmm.
and we try to do that. And I think that's why we end up in the same exact patterns, doing the same exact shit, because we don't realize we're attracting the same things that just feel comfortable.
But plot twist, the rewriting the story is going, I no longer want to be chosen. I choose myself.
Yeah.
Period.
So that's what healing looks like.
Yeah, no kidding. And I'm so proud of myself that I have put up such boundaries, and I don't chase anymore.
Right.
You want to go quiet?
Mm-mm. See you later.
Bye.
Have a nice
I'm not going to chase you.
Yep.
I'm not going to over explain myself. I'm not going to sit here and go, I just still need to be chosen. I am literally choosing myself and saying things that bother me. If you're saying some type of things or not saying some type of things and it's bothering me, you're now going to know. I don't have to shrink myself anymore.
I agree. And I think that this is a perfect way to transition into our last segment here.
Mm-hmm.
And that is our Unhinged Healing Roundtable time. I know we've spent the past hour talking about ourselves and everything we've felt and have gone through and our triggers and our habits and our fears and all that stuff in between. But now is the time that we actually are giving you guys some tools and tips and tricks to help you heal your inner child. Because that is so important to do. I think that in the past, I don't think we've given you a lot of the tools that you guys deserve. So moving forward, we plan on doing that. So
we want to give you the mirror.
We want to give you the mirror so you can help heal yourself as we're on our own healing journey. So we're going to start. We have a list of a couple of different things that we have noticed for us have really worked. And we hope that it helps you guys.
Yes, ma'am. I think personally for me, the most prolific one that has stood out is the Dear Inner Child letter that we did.
Mm-hmm.
That one right there, like, that was a raw emotional episode for us. And then we've heard from all of our listeners that have listened, like, holy cow, guys, like, that was deep. That yeah. was great. Like, who knew? And for me personally, like, there was a lot of things in there that I said that I wish I could have said to my mother.
Right.
You know, the person that was supposed to be there to protect me, the person that was supposed to be there to guide me and help raise me and nurture me. And I got none of that. So mm-hmm. putting that in that letter to her and to myself, that took a lot of weight off. And honestly, I've thought over the last couple months, time to do it again. Because dear teenage self.
Yeah.
You know, dear 20s. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like I should do that in years to come, like when I'm in my 80s. dear 60-year-old self.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Because it helps. I don't know. Like, it gets some stuff off your chest that you didn't know was there.
I agree with that. And I also feel like taking that moment to be vulnerable with yourself and speak truly, like, looking back and going, what would my little kid need to hear?
Yes.
You know? And that has such healing words in it. And holding that true, like, if you can just be truly authentically you when you're writing those letters and put that pain, put the heartache, put all of that into words, I think that really truly does help.
Mm-hmm.
Wholeheartedly.
Agreed.
I can tell you another thing that has been working for me, and I know Valerie does it too. Actually, I know I've said it actually in the past that it was actually from her ex that actually had led me towards doing like daily affirmations, but is truly doing mirror work. And mirror work is literally just going and standing in front of the mirror and looking at yourself and saying, I see you, you're safe, you're worthy, you're loved, you're capable of great things. And doing that and taking that few seconds out of your day to do that once a day, first thing in the morning when you first wake up, I think it's it helps heal a little bit,
mm-hmm.
but also helps get you ready to allow your true self, who you are now, to be in charge rather than your inner child.
I have a whole list of things on my mirror. I keep on my mirror because it's so important. I'm telling you, like, looking in the mirror first thing in the morning and seeing those things and reminding yourself of why you're such a bad bitch is literally so powerful. I am 100%. I am beyond that. I'm for that 100%.
Yeah.
Mine would be a trigger tracker.
Yeah.
So it's a mouthful. I'm sorry.
It is a trigger tracker. So what this really, it's really a tool. It's not about doing deep healing work right away. A lot of the times we get triggered and we spiral and we shut down or we start doing emotional work in the heat of it. But this literally is just a mirror for recognition. So it breaks emotional patterns. So what this is that it's a 3-column tracker. You're going to put in 1 column the trigger. So, my trigger would be people showing up for me and then going cold. The feeling attached to that, which would be anxiety, rejection, self-doubt, fear of abandonment, and the origin of that. My origin would be craving consistency. So doing this again allows for clarity and compassion with yourself. So it's not just about doing anything just yet. This literally is putting a mirror going, why am I feeling this?
Right.
So again, that's going to be the trigger, the feeling, and the origin.
Right. And I think that's so powerful. Because realizing what your trigger is and why what's originating it, I think helps you start to be more self-aware of how to handle your triggers.
Absolutely. And the feeling behind it, I think for a long time, I was just so afraid not to feel. And that's really when I started healing, was going, I just want to push this down. I want to go quiet. I want to be in my own head. I don't want to think about it. I don't want to feel this feel.
Right.
I'm telling you, I literally started healing this past year when I go, Valerie, sit in it.
Yeah.
Feel it. You pissed off? Be pissed off.
Yeah.
You're sad? Be sad. And for the longest time, what did I say to you the other day? I'm so sick and tired of being and putting on a mask of going, I'm fine. I'm fine. No, the fuck, I'm not fine.
It's okay to not be okay.
Yeah. And I know people say that, like, it's like fucking drawn out. It's okay to not be okay. But really fucking feel that, man.
Yeah.
Don't sit in it, but feel it. Give it space. Acknowledge it.
Give it a moment. Sit in it. Deal with it. Learn how to recover it.
Yep.
But don't just sit and dwell in it.
So that's what that tracker is for.
Yeah.
Gives you insight.
I think another important tracker, well, you could call it a tracker, is a journal. Do journal prompts.
Mm-hmm.
Ask yourself questions. What did you need to hear that you never did? What parts of me have I hidden to feel accepted? Questions like this are very insightful questions for yourself, for you to be able to emotionally navigate throughout the day without having to shut down or to have triggers from people or to have insight on how you could have handled a situation differently so that you don't sit there and have an emotional outburst or have an emotional shutdown or anything like that. You know, it's not fun to live in fear day by day. Mm. It's not fun to be triggered by every little thing.
No,
it's not fun to just live that kind of life. Like, I like to laugh. I want to be free and do whatever I need to do. So it is a process. I everybody says it takes 21 days to start a habit.
Yep.
It takes just that much longer, if not longer, to create a space where you feel healed or you feel comfortable in your own self, in your own body, and be able to express your emotions in that sense. So journal. Even if you don't like to write, all these smartphones, they have these cool little feature called voice memos, okay?
Yes.
Androids, iPhones, whatever. Talk to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Just not in public. Yeah. It's weird.
Or do what Valerie and I do, and we use chat, and we literally just pour our feelings into it.
Yeah.
And then she breaks it down and explains it to us.
Yes, she's a free therapist. Exactly.
She is a free therapist.
I'm 100% so down for that. And you know what's amazing is not only journaling those feelings in that moment gets it off of my chest and makes me feel like I can create a space to get that out of me. But also going back to that is just absolutely amazing to see the growth, because I'm going back to things back in November when I was writing in there, and to see how much I've changed and I've grown, it's incredible. So just even allowing that space to journal that, but also important step of journaling is going back and realizing and giving yourself a kudos, giving yourself a pat on the back of how far you've come.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like literally, like, it's such a, it's a beautiful thing.
It is. It truly is.
So this also brings me into another one, the pause and pattern. And this one personally is my favorite tool, and it's so powerful because this is for when I'm about to spiral, because I'm queen of spiraling and overthinking, because hey, welcome to my fucking life. So when I feel like I'm on the verge to overexplain, I'm on the verge to overgive myself, and I'm on the verge of shrinking myself just to be seen. Instead, I pause and I respond from awareness, just simply being aware. So you pause and say, I feel activated. I don't have to react. The old me would have just chased a response.
Yeah.
But pause in that moment. Just don't say anything. Give it a minute. You're going to breathe. Okay. Interrupt your pattern and change your physical state. Get up, go walk, or literally just go, shake it out, dance it out, do something. Physically change where you're at. Mine happens usually either when I'm laying in bed or I'm sitting on the couch or I'm in my car. Okay. I either change the music, I roll down the windows, change your physical state. And then ask yourself, what does my inner child need right now? Do I need comfort? Do I need reassurance? Do I need space from this? Think about before you react. And lastly, you're going to respond with intention. So not from survival. So don't text. Don't overexplain. You are literally choosing you in this moment.
I love that.
Now, and I'm being so serious, this is a nervous system work, a workaround. Okay. It literally re-regulates your body to rewrite your own story. Because when you're triggered in such things, it's a nervous system response.
It's like an anxiety attack almost. Yes. In a sense. And in that moment, you're not wanting to think clearly. So taking the moment to go, okay, I need to pause for a second.
Recognize the pattern,
realize what I'm experiencing and go from there can be extremely helpful.
Absolutely.
So I'm going to address one last one that I know that is extremely powerful and may seem a little kooky, but I'm telling you it works. And that is reparenting rituals.
Yes.
So I know probably not a lot of people have heard about this, but basically what you're going to do is you are going to create a routine for yourself once a day. Okay. And this is, you know, I know a lot of people say, oh, I'm too busy, but you have to prioritize this time for yourself and take 5 to 10 minutes out of your day once a day, whether you do it in the morning time or even when you're going to lay down in bed 5-10 minutes before you're going to sleep and take this time. You're going to create a quiet space where you're alone. And you're going to sit down and you're going to spend 5 to 10 minutes. And you don't have to talk out loud. You can even talk in your own head. But talk out to yourself, explaining that your child's safe, that she's loved, that she's wanted, that she's needed. And tell yourself all those things like you would do in the mirror, right? Sit and tell yourself all the things that you didn't hear as a child, because that is so valuable to that person that's inside you that's hurting. Okay. Then while you're doing that, another great thing to do is grab something of comfort, whether it be a soft, cozy blanket, if you have a stuffed animal that you've had since a kid, or there's a certain song that's comforting to you, find something that's comforting and have it with you. If it's a physical item, hold on to it. If it's music, put the song on quiet on replay as you're just living in that moment and experiencing what you're going through. Then at the end of that, I want you to close your eyes and then imagine revisiting your younger self in a painful moment. Walk up to that child and embrace her and tell her that you don't have to be strong anymore. Tell her she's not alone and that you are there for her and you will never leave her. And sit in that moment until your body literally softens and you can feel yourself relaxing. And if you do that once a day, spend 5-10 minutes of doing that for yourself, you would be surprised at how much that truly, truly helps.
I did a few months ago. There was a huge guided meditation on the inner child one, mm-hmm. that has helped me bring, that's a great tool for every day.
Yeah.
But there's also one that's a guided meditation, like a 30 minute long one. And, you picture yourself in like the old home, like at your earliest childhood memory, and you walk up to her, same type of idea. Walk up to her and you tell her the things and you observe. It asks you to observe what parents were in that room. When you imagine your old self, and then you take her hand, you walk her out, and then it's pretty much the same thing. I'm safe. I'm good. You know, I got you. Looking at yourself and going, I'm coming back home to you. I've built a life for you now.
Right. I'm the one protecting you.
Mm-hmm. You don't have to thrive in that anymore. I'm here.
Yeah. And that pretty much finishes our episode, but I do want to say one more thing before we close out, and that is this. And when I say this, I mean this. So we actually have journal prompts. We have the trigger tracing. We also have the pause and interrupt prompts.
Yes.
If you want any of those, we have a whole bunch of them already set up that we have in PDF form that you can literally print out and fill out yourself, or just take and put into a Word document and fill it out yourself. So you have questions to ask yourself to start working and you truly want that, please send us an email. We will, no problem, no question asked, send you over any of those that just tell us which ones you want, or if you want all of them, we can do that too. So just send us an email at unhingedmemoirs@gmail.com.
So we're also going to throw these ideas onto Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and kind of give you guys the tools in visual form of everything that we talked about here. So if you also just want to go over there, absolutely. Go check them out over there. They'll be on there as well for your liking and your taking.
Yes. And if you're not already doing so, we suggest, or we hope, that you would follow us on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, the Snapchat.
The snap at a chat.
Where you can listen to us on Amazon, YouTube, Apple Podcast, not Apple Music. There is a little confusion there.
Yes.
Spotify, you know, all the major platforms. We are there. And we hope that you guys enjoyed this episode, because this was a really heartfelt one for us and it was deep to dive into.
I hope we helped.
Because we, what did we do, Val?
We about to die. heaven.
And can I just say one other thing? I want to interject one other thing that I realized that I wanted to bring up earlier and I completely forgot to do. One of all three of our biggest habits is we like to laugh and joke at our own pain. So don't ever take that offensively or like we don't find what we're talking about serious, because we do. It's just how we handle it, because our life is literally a shit show half the time. So if we don't laugh, we cry.
Yeah.
So
yep. I don't know about you guys, but I'd rather laugh than cry.
Amen.
Me too. Me too. On that note, we love you, bitches. Bye.